This Hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by mmcomfortsystems.com. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Happening now.
Okay, we just got word moments ago, about a little over an hour ago, of a memo that went out to Seattle police officers. A memo that changes some significant policies. A memo that I knew was being discussed, the recommendations, I should say, in this memo were being discussed, but we didn't necessarily have a timeline of when it would be implemented. I can tell you that starting very quickly, in fact, it might already be in place, that under these policies, Seattle Police Department will no longer treat several violations, traffic violations, as the primary reason to engage in a traffic stop. They include expired or missing registration, which is sometimes a giant clue that a car had been stolen. What the Seattle Police Department just did was ban many non-criminal traffic stops, all in the name of equity. Equity, a term that doesn't mean anything anymore. The chief argues that because not everyone can afford to pay the traffic violation fines, that they cannot be enforced. But all this does is make it easier for car thieves to continue to prey on Seattleites, and that's the least dangerous consequence of this. This is a move that comes a few months after the Seattle Inspector General claimed police officers pose a risk to Black drivers that they pull over, because all cops are racist. In fact, the original proposal that Lisa Judge put out there, Lisa Judge being the Seattle Inspector General, would have banned all traffic stops. Thankfully, the police union was able to push back at that, so they had a little bit of a win here for sure. But the big losers are Seattle residents, or anyone who has to come into Seattle. This is remarkable. Now, this announcement came in a 1:42 p.m. memo that I got at 1:44 from multiple officers. And still, they're screenshotting it and sending it to me right now at 3:07 and 30 seconds in the afternoon. And it tells officers that they can no longer pull over motorists for the following violations. This would have to be the primary violation, meaning if this is what they saw and this is all that they saw, you cannot pull over the motorist. Expired or missing vehicle registration. Issues with the display of registration plates. Technical violations such as items hanging from the rearview mirror and cracks in the windshield. Bicycle helmet violations. Now, Seattle Inspector General Lisa Judge tried to get a total ban on traffic stops. I spoke to a source with close knowledge of the negotiations. And I was told that SPOG, the Seattle Police Officers Guild, pushed back very, very hard, saying, look, if you do this, it's going to be a lawless free-for-all, more so than we're already experiencing in the city of Seattle. And in the end, SPOG was successful in stopping the most fringe view coming from Lisa Judge. But we're still in a position where we are choosing now not to enforce laws that very easily will lead, very quickly will lead, to an increase in car theft and so much more. Understand that a lot of times, when an officer ends up pulling someone over because they have some expired car tabs, they have a reasonable suspicion that something else might be up. Reasonable suspicion. That driver, something off about that person. They keep giving me a look. I don't know what it is. And they notice the fact that this license plate maybe has been removed, which is generally a sign. When you combine it with a very suspicious-looking driver who's visibly sweating now that he sees you behind him, that the car is stolen or something worse. We've seen instances in which there have been kidnappings that we were able to stop. Or a trunk full of weaponry illegally stolen from someone or held illegally. But remember, what do we no longer have to detain in the state of Washington? What's the new standard? The standard went from what it used to be, which is reasonable suspicion. That's enough to detain someone, to probable cause. Very high bar. So to give you an example, under these policies combined, Seattle's policy and the Washington State new law, if there was a car driven by a suspicious-looking dude with missing tags and a missing license plate, all that stuff is just not there, and there's a bullet hole in the windshield, you cannot use that to detain temporarily that driver because you don't hit probable cause. Now, it might be different if someone said to 911 operator, hey, there was just a, I just fired at a car because they kidnapped my daughter. She's in the back seat, blah, blah, blah. Probably shouldn't shoot at that car, by the way, sir. That might change things. But let's talk about the logic that Interim Chief Adrian Diaz is putting into this memo to justify these policies. He's framing this around not public safety, but about social justice. He says, quote, we know there are concerns about if these violations disproportionately fall on those who are unable to meet financial demands. So in other words, he is saying that someone can't afford it, thus, that's not fair, thus, we shouldn't enforce it. Now, if that is sort of foggy reasoning to you, it's because it's very much illogical. By his reasoning, we wouldn't be able to give any tickets to anyone. We'd have to get rid of every single infraction. Because if you're telling me that it's unfair, it's disproportionately impacting communities of color because some people can't afford it, well, guess what? That means we get rid of all infractions. Now, if you think that that is a bad idea, it is, you're right. Understand, it makes even less sense because in the same memo, he says that those violations that are as primary violations you can't use to pull someone over. You can, however, still enforce them if there was another primary violation that is not, in fact, banned. So here is what he is saying. A motorist can't afford a non-criminal traffic fine when no other primary violation occurs. However, they somehow can, and I guess should be forced, into paying a different primary violation on top of or in addition to the one you just banned. So the one ticket they can't afford, it's unfair. But two, thumbs up, I guess they can afford it. Does that make any sense whatsoever? No, of course not. And part of the reason it doesn't make any sense is because that's not really what this is about. This is the Adrian Diaz spin on this. Whether he's doing that because he wants to please the activists now in charge of the mayor's office. Because remember, he's the interim chief and has been since August of 2020. He wants this job. I don't know if he's doing it to please them or if he's just saying it because he realizes that he can't say what this is really about, which is the claim, the belief by Lisa Judge that cops who pull over black motorists in the city of Seattle put those black motorists at an increased risk of death. That is what she believes. How do we know it? Because she said it 6 months ago. A little bit more than 6 months, May of last year, she put out this report or this memo arguing for a total ban on traffic stops. She argued for that because she said, with quote, without drilling down to underlying issues and root causes, because she's too lazy to drill down on the underlying issues and root causes, police and community are destined to continue the same cycle of traffic stops gone wrong. To that end, the issue of what and how conduct should be policed is perhaps as important as other root causes, such as institutional racism, subconscious bias. For safety of both officers and the public and for racial fairness, SPD should seek to eliminate routine traffic stops for civil and non-dangerous violations. She thinks cops are too racist to pull people over or to pull black people over. That's what this is about. And in doing this, not only does she hit at officer morale, but she hits at our safety. It is already out of control in the city of Seattle when it comes to auto thefts. Already out of control. This makes it so much easier to steal a car and get away with it in the city of Seattle. But kudos, this is about equity. This is about social justice. And shame on Adrian Diaz, who I like. He's been on the show many times. Hopefully he'll be on again. But shame on him for adopting this and trying to put lipstick on this pig. I don't know why he's doing it, but that is exactly what he's doing. And that's wrong. Traffic, go. Local tax expert Greg Nunn says the IRS is offering relief options to help taxpayers affected by COVID-19 who owe the IRS. And that includes those currently in a payment arrangement. Contact Greg at 425-947-1967 or Google NUNN. Nunn, better tax resolution. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at the movies?
It's Friday. You know what that means? It means I get to talk movies. The big weekend release is Scream. It is the fifth in the series about a killer in a ghost face mask who terrorizes a small town. And the killer is back, along with the main cast from the original films. Neve Campbell as Sidney Prescott, David Arquette as Dewey Riley, and Courtney Cox as Gail Riley.
Hello.
Hey, Sid, it's me.
Dewey? Oh, my God. How are you?
Sid, it's happening again.
Some idiot in a ghost face mask. Three attacks so far.
But something about this one just feels different. Do you have a gun?
I'm Sidney Prescott. Of course I have a gun.
So with the killer back at it, Sidney Prescott returns home with Gail, along with Dewey, who never left. And they pledge to kill the ghost face killer after he targets a new family.
I tried running, too. It doesn't work. It always follows.
All due respect, that's your life, not mine.
I'm not so sure about that.
What do you want from me, lady?
Hey, watch your tone, new girl.
You know how they always say it goes back to the original? Here's the original. I want your help. Because you're wrong, this is your life now, which means that whoever this is going to keep coming for you.
So?
So I want you to help us kill him.
You want me to help you and the host of a morning show commit murder?
Correct.
Yeah.
I loved Scream, and anyone who's a fan of the original is going to love it too. It's got amazing Easter eggs and callbacks, but the truth is you don't really need to be too familiar with the original source material to enjoy it, although it does elevate the movie when you know its history. Now, this version of Scream, it's just the next chapter. It's not a re-envisioning. It is not a sort of a redo. It's not the same story. And it manages to hold on to that same feel as the classic while still being a unique addition to the Scream series. I would probably say it's considerably more knowing than the past films. And to see the original cast back at it, doing what they do, trying to go after the killer and find out who the killer actually is, I do think manages to come together really, really well. The writing is sharp and funny. The violence is considerably more graphic than the others. And while it's not scary, and I would say none of the Scream films are traditionally scary, it is rather tense. The new storyline is compelling, and I think it's original, at least in the sense that it takes on that sort of self-aware nature of being based on horror films and how everything is supposed to go in this small town. I think it works really, really well. And what they do with the original characters, how they've evolved in their own way, I think it really works. I went into this thinking it's going to be hard to make another Scream movie. Certainly, it's hard to believe another Scream movie could work enough to the point where it sets up future films. Hard to, I don't know, be interesting enough to a new generation of horror fans who certainly know what Scream is and view it as a classic, but they weren't screaming for a new one. They seemed to like that weird new generation of horror films where less is more. There's not necessarily a human killer, but something supernatural. But I think Scream should pave the way for a new generation of this series. I loved it, and I recommend it. But understand it's a hard R. What movie are you going to see this weekend? Send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
Okay, I am told that you're all racists if you don't support a total Democrat takeover of the elections, of state elections. They want you to believe that if you don't support H.R. 1 and the Voting Rights Bill, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, that you are a virulent racist. And not only are you a virulent racist, but you also understand that all future elections will be stolen by the Republicans. That's what this is about. Leaving elections the way they are right now in the power of the state, of the states, I should say, where Republicans have lost races and won races, leaving it status quo as far as who is in charge will lead to stolen elections that Republicans will steal. Now, if you think that makes sense, you are what I would call a dum-dum. But I'm trying to not be so mean to people other than producers. So I'm not going to call you a dum-dum, but I am going to think that. Ruben Gallego is a congressman. He was on with MSNBC, and he makes this dum-dum argument.
If we don't get Voting Rights Act passed, we don't have some of these protections, there will need to be a physical coup. They will win this on Election Day by not counting votes or just in general certifying, like direct certification that the president wants from state houses and assemblies.
Okay, so in the future, they're going to do what they've done in the past, which is when they lose an election, they claim someone's cheating. They do it all the time. When Donald Trump does it, oh my God, it is treasonous. I'm surprised that our democracy can withstand it. How in the world can we allow someone to question our elections other than us? Other than Stacey Abrams, who said the election was stolen from her and she still hasn't conceded when she ran for governor in Georgia. Donald Trump, treasonous. Democrats, virtuous. We are fighting for you. We're fighting for you. And the only way that they can pass this is if they get rid of the filibuster. A Jim Crow era law or a Jim Crow era policy. The Jim Crow filibuster that Democrats used a record number of times from 2019 to 2020, which is so weird. It's weird that they would use a Jim Crow filibuster so many times and break records. It's even getting folks like David Axelrod, former advisor to Obama, of which Biden was a part of the ticket and a part of the administration. Even he goes on CNN.
Yeah, look, I don't think the president's rhetoric in Atlanta was particularly useful.
It's not useful. It's silly. And it doesn't win arguments. How do we know that? Because it didn't win the argument. Because you have folks like Kristen Sinema, Joe Manchin, Chris Coons, John Tester, all Democrat senators saying, yeah, we're not going to get rid of the filibuster. This is ridiculous. But they continue to think that by talking the way that they're talking, it's going to suddenly connect. By claiming everything is an example of white supremacy. Everything is racist. Everything is sexist. It's institutionalized. It's all over the place. It's subconscious. All of it. Everything. All the time. When we don't get our way. When you disagree. White supremacist. Oh, you're black. Doesn't matter. You're a black white supremacist. Oh, you're gay and Jewish. White supremacist. They think that is a winning policy. Oh, but they're uniters, but they're trying to unite the country. And if you disagree, you're a white supremacist. Gosh. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation, send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. Let's get you home the right way with or right way traffic. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in on this Friday. If you missed my appearance last night on Fox News at night, it's all good. I mean, it's actually kind of selfish that you chose to spend time with someone other than me on television. You can, however, watch it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show, or on twitter.com/Jason Rantz, or just go over to youtube.com/Jason Rantz. If you're sensing a trend, I post it everywhere. There was a group of students earlier today in Seattle who pretended to feel unsafe going back into the classroom because of COVID. How can I tell that they're pretending? Because I took 10 seconds to Google and do some research. There are other media outlets that want to pretend that what happened today in this student walkout was organic. It's just, you know, these are kids who are heroic or something. I mean, should we call, look, yeah, they're brave because they're doing things that don't quite match with the actual science and weirdly taking positions that are oddly identical to what the teachers union is pushing. And actually, Jason was able to find people online who are teachers at some schools acknowledging that they faked everything today because it was all a ruse. But you know, other than that, these kids are heroes. Some activist kids walked out of school today. They staged a protest. We're in awe of their bravery. Or shocked by their dishonesty and simple lack of COVID understanding. But again, something, you know, we got to give them some props. These were students at Cleveland High School, Franklin High School. We had some at Chief Self High School.
Most of my classes, like not even half of the classes there, whenever we're in the halls, we're shoulder to shoulder. Like there's not enough COVID regulations being monitored in the schools. And it's just uncomfortable. It's not safe and it's dangerous.
I am so glad that Mia, who's a senior at Cleveland, has come forward and finally voiced what a generation of kids have been asking for. More rules. Enforcement of more rules. I'm in awe. I'm in awe of how stupid that comment she just made is. Sorry, there was a pregnant pause there. You probably thought I was just in awe. I wasn't. Regulate me, she says. Well, at a different protest, putting up a stop regulating my body sign. Again, we don't expect consistency at all. It's not safe and it's dangerous. Did you hear that at the end there? This is a senior who went through the Seattle public school system.
Regulations being monitored in the schools, and it's just uncomfortable. It's not safe and it's dangerous.
It's not safe and it's dangerous. She's being redundant and repetitive. See what I just did there? Nothing? You're not going to give me anything, Producer Brady, who's pulling a double shift today?
Oh, no. I
just
feel
nothing?
Like...
There was nothing.
I mean,
I got nothing out of you.
You got me to laugh.
Not on air.
Haha.
I don't want your pity secondary laugh. I wanted the original guffaw. Here's what their demands are.
The N95 mask and COVID test every week that's imperative. Week. We can't that's be imperative. In schools not knowing who and who doesn't have COVID. Also, COVID tracking, that's just like making sure we all have assigned seats and we're maintaining that 6-foot measurement.
Yeah, I mean, track us. Test us every single day. Huh. It's kind of weird because I'm looking at a screenshot of a teacher, Rebecca Neal from Chief Seelth High School, who posted her demands. Provide N95 masks. Hold on.
The N95 mask.
Okay. Provide weekly on-site testing.
And COVID test every week because that's imperative. We can't be in schools not knowing who and who doesn't have COVID.
Okay. There is one on here that she didn't mention, in fairness.
Let's hear it.
Boost funding for mental health. Oh, I've got a clip from Jocelyn, another student.
We also want, like, mental health resources.
That's just so weird. How is it that it's exactly what the teachers' union is asking for?
It's like they sent it out and asked the students to go about it.
Okay, look, people sometimes accuse me of being a little too cynical. And I refuse. I think that this was totally coincidental that on the same day that these two students, whom if you Google their names, you'll see their activism history. I find it coincidental that today they asked specifically for that, which is just word for word what the teachers are asking for. And then also weird because I'm looking at this Rebecca Neal post on Facebook that says, tomorrow, a majority of the staff at Chief Seelth is calling out sick to call attention to the negligence of the district. We want to be in school teaching in person, she says, while calling in sick so she doesn't have to be in school teaching in person. Shame on any of you who, even over the course of the COVID shutdowns, defended teachers the way that you used to. This kind of blind loyalty to teachers. Blind loyalty that I certainly understand. Like, intellectually, I get it. I'm not blindly loyal to anyone except for my barber, because he's amazing. But other than that, I intellectually understand, but can never get behind that. This idea that we should just flatly defend anything that a group of people or an individual does. Because human beings sometimes make mistakes, sometimes act in ways that we shouldn't give a pass to. And what we've seen over and over and over again over the course of this pandemic, that's now an endemic, teachers choosing what's best for them, what's convenient for them, at the expense of your kids. Your kids are suffering. Parents are also suffering because of this, but let's be very crystal clear. When you keep kids home from school the way that they've been doing, they are the ones who are hurting the most. Sure, they're hurting academically. They're not learning anything while stuck in front of a computer screen alone for 6, 7, 8 hours a day, which is odd because I thought like 3 years ago we said, stop keeping kids in front of screens. Got to cut down their screen time. It's not good for them. All of a sudden, it's good for them. But beyond that, they're stuck at home alone from their peers. And they were stuck at home for a year. And you saw what it did to them. You saw they got more depressed and anxious. Some of them suicidal. And that's a result of these teachers who know damn well that they can be in class right now and do it safely. But I guess now they're owed free N95 masks. Are you going to be fitted professionally for those N95 masks? Jocelyn and Mia? Are you going to go through the training to make sure that it gets properly fitted and you're wearing it correctly and you do that every single day? Oh, and by the way, outside of class, what are you doing? Do you go over to your friend's house? Do you go to a movie? Do you go to a Seahawks game when, you know, they didn't suck so badly and they actually were a part of the postseason? Or do you stay at your home all day, maybe tweeting about what your next bit of activism will be? Would you like a massage too? I mean, you're adding to these demands. Let's just add massage to it. Foot massage. Your achy feet because you're running around campus trying to stay 6 feet away from others. Because you wouldn't want to get exposed. And I'm sure, by the way, you're vaccinated, although, let's be honest, that doesn't matter when it comes to Omicron, something that we're pretending doesn't evade the vaccine while we tell people constantly get vaccinated. Oh, hey, here is a member of the teachers union. Guess what she's saying to Como?
What our students are feeling is a direct result of how our system is failing.
Their system is failing them. What our students are feeling is what we told them to say. I mean, what they are truly organically feeling on their own. And we have no influence over whatsoever. Plus, they shredded all the talking points and then burned them because we knew people would go searching for them. But sure, you're going to tune in tonight. You're going to catch like 4 minutes of some local newscaster. I'm sure it's going to be on Woke 5 News talking about how brave these students are. They're fighting for what's safe for them, what's best for them, what's right and just. In fact, Seattle students rally outside school district headquarters over COVID safety concerns. That's right. Before, students really never gave a damn about safety, but suddenly, when it comes to a virus that impacts children the least, they are the most concerned. And it has nothing to do with the teachers' union. How many students actually participated? I don't know. Let's find out how many teachers have students that go to school. And then we can figure that number out. And the Woke 5 newscaster that I'm looking at right now has the ugliest tie that I've ever seen. And I know quality ties, do I not?
Oh, you do.
There was a pause there. You should have jumped a little bit faster.
Sorry, I'll be more anxious next time.
He's wearing a skinny tie. first of all.
Oh, like one of the thin ones?
Yeah,
like
the super thin one. First of all, dude, you're 47 years old. Let's push back on that. And then number two, I'm looking at some of the images of the walkout. Yeah, oh, wow. 30 kids. Not even one, two. If I can count them, it's not truly a walkout. Push the button. Welcome back to the Jason Ranch. I was making fun of producer Brady during the break because I know more about basketball than he does, apparently. Just throwing that out there.
I know baseball.
I had to tell him who Kyrie Irving was.
Yeah? Who is he?
A famous designer of shoes.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got aliens on his Nikes, and they're ugly as sin, but I like them.
Okay, then.
Okay, so there's some interesting sports stories today that we'll try to get through as much as we can, both insufferable woke commentary from folks who overstate the problem that they see. The first one is around COVID. Bill Walton, former basketball player, he's currently doing some color commentary on the college basketball season, and they were yesterday. He and his co-commentator, Dave, is it Pash? Him, I don't know. I've never heard of him.
That is correct, Pash.
Yeah, there you go. He's got a passion for the game or something stupid. So they were covering the game. It was UCLA versus the Ducks. Weirdly, the Ducks ended up winning. They're unranked. That part I know.
It was embarrassing.
UCLA is what, three?
They were.
Yeah, they were. And I'm not looking at my notes here to know that. I'm looking at my notes. So they were doing the game, and there were no fans in the stadium. And God forbid someone say, hey, it's not quite the same game when you don't have the fans. You'll get Bill Walton insufferably getting on that soapbox telling us how he's a hero saving people's lives.
There's no one else in the building. Remember, there's no fans here except
I'm tired of your complaints about that.
Look, there's no complaining. It's just stating a fact for people that might be tuning in that don't know.
There's a pandemic going on. Please, there's public health issues.
Hey, dummy, you realize that there's been a pandemic going on since 2 years ago, right? Have there been fans in the stadiums at all between then and now? Oh, there have been? Oh, I guess you weren't too worried about saving lives. Were you not working that time? Hero, saving the lives of the unvaccinated, of the dirty.
Through January 21st, there will not be fans at indoor venues at UCLA as Harmon gets the bucket, but Gurrier hits the deck hard.
There's not fans in the building because people are dying of COVID. Okay? And people are concerned about that.
But not concerned enough to stop playing, right?
That is correct.
I'm just throwing that out there. People are dying. We can't be worried about this silly game. It's just a game. Oh, we are playing it currently. Like, we're literally right now. In fact, I'm making my money off of talking about that silly game that's happening right now at apparently great threat to these very athletic, very healthy players on the field. But they were wearing masks, though. KN95, right?
No.
Oh, they weren't. Oh, that's so weird. But, again, I know how basketball works. They were 6 feet apart the whole time.
Yeah?
No.
No.
Oh, that's so weird. But thank you, Bill Walton. Thank you for your self-righteous indignation there. I am sick and tired of people complaining about it. People are dying. Okay, go home. You, by the way, Bill Walton, find out his age. You are in the demographic most impacted by COVID. How old is he? I just said find his age. And now you're all like, I didn't know that was to who do you think I was talking to? Dylan, the intern? I'm not going to give that to him.
He is 69 years of age.
So weird. So he's over 65?
Yep.
My gosh. It's almost like he might have some concerns about COVID. And it didn't kind of sound like he was talking through a mask either. People are dying, Bill. Now, meanwhile, in the other world of woke sports on ESPN, although I don't know if it's on ESPN, Skip Bayless's show, what is that? What channel? Is that Fox Sports?
No, I think it's
ESPN, right?
ESPN. Yeah, okay. Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp.
That's ESPN. He went off on a monologue almost in tears once he found out that after the NFL saw the departure, firing of the Houston Texans coach, who happens to be black, he's all like, oh my gosh, this is, we only have one black coach now. And so woke white dude with his white privilege, Skip Bayless, went on this rant about how this is disgusting, this is shameful.
And it dawned upon me that only Mike Tomlin is the last man standing, the last black head coach in the National Football League on the eve of the playoffs. It rocked me.
It rocked?
Because the gravity of it hit me as we near yet another Martin Luther King Day.
Oh, he did it. Oh, he went there. Rich white guy, unwilling to give up his job for a black voice to be on the show, talking for about 5 minutes straight as his black co-host did not get a word in. He got a couple grunts of agreement.
Yeah.
That's about it. He's going to lecture us about how it is somehow racist that there is only one black head coach in the NFL now, despite the fact that there are nearly 60% black players, which I imagine then means we should cut those black players to get more in line with what the population of the United States is. Because I'm told every team, every league is supposed to look like the population, like society. Because when we say we only have one black coach, he's basically saying, well, that's unheard of. We have way more than whatever percentage that matters, makes up of black people here. We have to have a reflection of our community. Oh, okay. Got it.
On Monday, this is impossibly wrong. It's almost surreally bad.
You don't have to do surreally.
It's a bad look. It's a bad feel. It's a bad taste.
So real quick, Skip, what should that number be? Should it be 60%? I'm serious. I don't know what he's saying here. Who should we fire? Tell us the coaches we should fire and then hire someone based on their race. That's basically what he's saying. From the position of white privilege and wealth that he has. But Skip Bayless is a very popular or former popular player, right?
Yeah, he's really old now.
Yeah.
He's 70.
Yeah. Uh-huh. What was the racial makeup back then? I was saying, I mean, he could have stepped down, just thrown that. He could step down now and give Shannon some more. Shannon, what's his name?
Shannon Sharp.
He's dumb. They're both dumb.
Their whole idiots. Show is based on dumb talking.
They're just dumb. It's a Jason Rancho.